NamNab is a podcast that deals with the grisly details of a variety of topics, including true crime cases, government cover-ups, conspiracies, and the paranormal. This content is not suitable for everyone. Viewer discretion is advised.
She was murdered.
What's up, my dudes?
Welcome back.
This is not a monster, not a boogeyman.
I'm Naomi.
I'm Janae.
I'm Les.
And this week, I brought you something a little bit different than our usual caseload.
Yay!
Woo!
So, I know you guys know this, but I don't know if we've talked about this with our listeners before, but I am an art person. I have an art degree.
Art person. Art person. The rad art you guys see for our podcast is done by Naomi.
Yeah. But, I have always had this as a passion before I went into mental health and had an affinity for dead things. But,
Jeffrey Dahmer.
this artist in particular has been a big touch point for me and an inspiration for my art. So now I'm going to share it with you guys. And, like the big ass nerd I am, I made a PowerPoint for them.
PowerPoint. It looks really cool, just so you guys know.
Can we get it up on the website?
Yeah. Yes. So that way, hopefully, when you guys are listening to this, you can reference the blog post on namnap.com so you can keep up with the photos that I am going to be referencing. So that way you can also read along and look at those pictures.
Links in the description, y'all. Cool. To all of the things.
Fuck yeah.
And of course, some of his art will be on our Instagram, not a boogeyman at so you can see some of the stuff as well.
Yes.
So,
yay.
And I also take any chance I can to talk about how terrible Nazis are. So on that note, the trigger warnings for this one are Nazis, concentration camps, and unsettling imagery.
Whoa.
Okay. Cool.
I'm kind excited. Of fucking, yeah, me too.
I'm like nervous.
Same.
Like Nazis and art?
I literally only
Luckily
saw
he's
Shutter
Island.
Not
a Nazi artist, because we're not here for that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, we are not here
for that. No Nazi art.
So, Zdzisław Bęcki was born in a small town of Sanok, Poland on February 24th, 1929. To understand not only the childhood of Bęcki, but his life as well, and his art, you need to really understand his hometown and the wars that happened in it.
He's Polish, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Poland
fucking Nazis.
Got fucking destroyed by the
shit. I'm going to get into some really heavy numbers here, so.
Oh, shit.
Man.
If any of you are out there who are, like, not Holocaust believers, please just don't fucking comment your shit.
Just look, use your eyes, please.
It makes zero sense that people don't believe that's a thing. I just don't get it.
You know that, like, really hot model I love, Dani Devine?
Yes.
She's Jewish.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She posted about a really toxic ex on her Instagram, in case any of you, like, fucking want to go check it out. But he was basically telling her the Holocaust did not happen.
What?
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Whatever. It's like, the numbers don't add up. It's like, off of which context, you dick?
Yeah, like
what?
All
what
the
are
numbers
you
add up.
About?
They literally all add up to the Holocaust.
So, Sanok has historically been made up of German farmers, and Sanok served as the Eastern Front during 1914 and the 1915 winters of World War I. So, during the war, the town was occupied by the Russian army. And the town was pretty much destroyed by the Russian soldiers. So that really damaged their history. And then after that, the town was taken over by troops of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So this town has Jesus been constantly Christ. Occupied by different military forces.
That fucking sucks, dude.
How do you even lead a normal life?
You don't.
When you're like constant town's a war zone all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah. Constant terror.
Well, and it... You have, like, daily reminders of this later on that I'm going to get into that are pretty bleak. Mm. So, Sanok had a population that was 30% Jewish, one of the largest in all of Poland. But during World War II, this population was almost entirely eliminated.
Wow.
So, to this day, the center of town where the Jewish ghetto once was, the people there were murdered en masse by Nazis, and there is now just an open valley where that used to be.
Wow.
Wow. So pretty much there's been no rebuilding in that area.
I'm so fucking pumped you did this episode, dude.
Yeah, this is super interesting.
So all of the largest and most notorious concentration camps were all located in German-occupied Poland, six of them serving as extermination camps, including Auschwitz.
Okay.
So in 1939, 5,400 Jews live in Sanok. The Zaslaw concentration camp was a forced labor camp where these individuals were deported to, and during the war, this camp would see about 15,000 prisoners pass through it. Jews from Sanok were murdered in a cemetery in town, the forest, or just on the outskirts of town so they could be immediately buried.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Those who did not die in Zaslaw were transferred to the Bezlik extermination camp. And then when Zaslaw was being liquidated in January of 1943, basically they were sent out to all these different extermination camps and they were killed in the gas chambers.
Oh my God. Can we talk about how many fucking murders we cover on this podcast and how none of them are actually as disgusting as this?
They don't even match the body count of the fucking Nazis.
Yeah.
So, and to give you context of Zaslaw, it was about 8 kilometers away from Sanok, so that's about a 9-minute drive.
Wow. Okay,
that's so disgusting. It is incredibly close.
Jesus. Oh my God.
I can only imagine like the energy that comes off the ground.
Yeah.
In a place like that.
I have some friends that are sensitive to that stuff, and they went to Auschwitz, mm-hmm. and they, like, were overwhelmed and had to leave immediately just because of how much stuff they were picking up. And I had another friend that just, like, broke down crying because, it's so much. And I am going to talk about some very specific stuff about the gas chambers later, so just a warning for that as well.
We'll have a moment of silence after this just so that it's commemorated.
Yeah. So Baczynski was born at a time where Poland was still recovering from World War One, which had ended in 1918. And then there was like a war with Soviet Russia until 1921. And then you can go ahead.
Do you know if he himself was Jewish?
I don't believe so. So the picture I have up right now that you'll see on the website, there's a picture of 12-year-old Baczynski playing with his friend in front of an abandoned Soviet base in 1941. They're playing with old Soviet artillery shells.
Oh my God.
Just because this was so common. This is the case in, I'm reading a book right now, you guys will also see it on the website, that is dealing with children during the, after World War II in England. Mm-hmm. And playing in the ruins of old places like this or just destroyed houses from the bombs is incredibly common.
Yeah.
So they'll just go play tag in these places, and any regular childhood stuff still happened during the war.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's just playing with these old artillery shells
we're chilling
with these.
It's really strange that they're just up against the wall of this abandoned
It's like a picture someone would take in their backyard.
Yeah.
Except it's, an old military base.
Right, and there's, a shitload of artillery shells around these children.
Yeah. So World War II started in 1939 when Baczynski was 10, and he grew up during the terrifying and traumatic occupation of Nazis in Poland and the various blood-soaked stain that they would leave on the land. Mm-hmm. During this time, 100,000 Polish families were forcibly removed from their homes, including 30,000 children, and forced into labor from the age of 12. Over 4,000 of these children were seen as acceptable candidates for, quote, Germanization, where they were taken away from their families and sent away. Because they were seen as, either they matched the physical description of what they deemed preferable, or they saw them as still being, re-educational.
So, what... what the U.S. did to Native
mm-hmm.
children.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
Great.
Baczynski was 16 when World War II ended, and the country was once again under Soviet occupation. When he was able to go to university, finally, he applied for both fine arts and architecture, but he settled for studying architecture and graduated in 1952. He worked for several years as a supervisor for a construction site and realized he hated his fucking job. that it was too full of boring, mindless tasks and pressures, so he took a job designing buses instead, and he started to begin with experimenting with photography. So a lot of his stuff is very dark and doesn't really match this idea of photography that was going on at the time, where people tried to catch the true image of how things were. Because in Victorian times, like photography was always really blurry and it was supposed to catch life as it's happening. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to give a quick shout out here because my whole interest in this was brought back up by a YouTuber I actually watched. His YouTube name is In Praise of Shadows. And he does a very good job of covering this, so heavy kudos to him, and I would recommend his video really heavily.
We'll link it in the description as well.
Cool.
But
so, do you know when this photo was taken?
So, they were all taken pretty much from the time he graduated high school into, like, the 1950s. That's when he's really, like, practicing with photography.
Yeah, these are really rad.
You, like, would never guess that they're from that time frame.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can actually move forward another one here. So his photographs were a drastic contrast to the photography of the time that focused on catching people and places as they were, being clear about their subject matter and purpose. Bukinski's interest in unsettling, dark fantasy, sadomasochistic, and erotic imagery was obvious in his works and shocked viewers. Bukinski seemed to try and catch the essence of things without directly showing it, and his photography was classified as surrealist and expressionistic. He at no point cared about, you know, what critics had to say or what trends were happening. He just wanted to focus on what would appear in his dreams and things he would obsess over. His photography could show that a funny and artistic side to him as well. So you can see, like, he uses shadow very, very heavily mm-hmm. in all of his art because he wants to kind of leave that mysterious edge to it. But he did do some, like, funny stuff as well.
Yeah. He's really cool.
So, like, not all of this stuff was, like, horribly, horribly, you know, fucked up. So there is one photo that he would be known for, which is Sadist Corset that we have here, which was revealed in 1957. You can clearly see where his sadomasochistic theme is coming in. There's a nude woman in this picture who is being viewed from the back, a photograph that might normally not be considered erotic by most because of the blunt cropping of the photo, so the woman's head is not visible, and there's an out-of-focus piece of furniture that's blocking the line of her back and any parts that may be considered erotic, and then the pose, how straight her arms are to her side, is not really considered erotic either. And then there's a very obvious, like, twine or whatever that's almost cutting into her flesh here. So, Les, you actually said something kind of interesting to me about this.
Oh, yeah.
That you still view this as erotic.
Yeah, when I first looked at this, somehow I was like, ooh, sassy. I think it's because, once you guys see this, but I think it's because of the pose the woman's in. Like, oftentimes when I see women tied up in this sort of art form that's become a lot more popular now, which is also 10 times more impressive that he had this at the beginning of this time era.
Yeah.
But, you see them in these poses that are kind of, like, constricting a mm-hmm. lot of the time. And she's, like, standing up straight, has full capability of all of her limbs.
She's just kind of wearing
it. She's in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really nice looking.
Yeah. Like, and you also made a comment that, like, to you, this reads almost as feminist.
Yeah, because of that. Like, she's in full control at this point, and she's mm-hmm. wearing it because she wants to, is what I take from it. And it's hot. Like, he appreciates the woman's body in different ways than it's usually, and these are beautiful parts of her body, I think, and, like, just really well done. I like it a lot.
Yeah. I personally really like this photo. It's one I would like to get printed and put in my home.
Yeah, like I said, I was like, I should put that in my bathroom.
Yeah.
Is that a weird place for it? Maybe, but
does it really matter? It's your house.
Yeah, right.
Some people have pictures of themselves naked in their bathroom, so this is not the weirdest thing you could put in
which
your bathroom.
Which bathroom have you walked in?
I know,
so
right?
I need to know.
I'm talking about Trisha Paytas on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Oh, she does?
Yep. I don't watch her.
But also,
I don't either, but I've seen that shit. It's because she's doing weird MyCam shit right now.
Okay. Oh. Okay.
But I've also seen, like, this really weird evil angel looking down on me when I was trying to poop in someone's house, and I was just like, it was so gothic and so weird.
I love that. It's terrifying. No, I think, because, like, the reason that people were saying that this was, like, not erotic for the times is, like, this is still the time frame of, like, pinup, mm-hmm. and people are still doing, like, the, you know, alluring poses, and you can still see like makeup. Full frontal of this person. And like, this is the exact opposite. And like, people are still kind of turned off by this idea of like sharing your kinks. Like, kinks are still, you know, something we don't talk about. And like, this is something where it's like, she, like, you can see in this picture, the string is cutting into her to an extent. And it's like,
definitely pressing. Right?
Yeah. And to like, other people, this probably is like, oh, that looks so uncomfortable. She's probably so uncomfortable. And like, how would anyone find this erotic? And like, it takes different people to look at it and see that, like, but she looks more in control in this situation than probably a lot of those other girls are.
Can you see this? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think it's really nice. And I feel like, yeah. I even took into consideration the tightness of it, and it seems like the type of twine they're using seems soft in a way.
Yeah, it looks kind of like shoelaces almost.
Honestly, you put me in anything semi-tight, I'm gonna look like a sausage trying to come out of the cage.
That's what I mean. Like, everything looks like a net on
anytime I wear fishnet.
No, I really love it. And you can also tell that like it ends at a certain point, like her hands are free. And her hands are free. I love that.
Yeah, and you know, this is one that it caused a public outcry and backlash because of it. So, and a critic went as far as to call Bukinski's work as anti-photography, and that the surrealist photography like this should not even be acknowledged. So, people were pressed about this one.
People were pressed.
But his photography did end in the early 1960s because he felt like it was too restrictive, and that he didn't have the ability to alter the photos in a way that allowed for his creative vision and imagination to be fully exposed. So he started to experiment with sculpture, and he started doing some more abstract work, and then he started to do some more drawing work. He never really visited any museums and stuff for his, like, he never visited museums or looked at other artists. Mm-hmm. Like, all this stuff came from his head, and he prides himself on that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Which
he should. Like, this is fucking new age at the time. Like,
yeah.
Something that's never happened before.
Well, totally, and I doubt different. He would find anything like his stuff in the museums at that time anyway.
No.
Yeah. And, like, he loved classical music, but he also loved rock music.
Yay.
Like, he would blast it. And he had, like, soundproof rooms in his house, and he created his own studio so he could listen to this music. Mm-hmm. And every single video you see of him painting, he's got these big headphones on, mm-hmm. To a point where he got hearing loss later on in life. Because he was just blasting it.
That's awesome.
While he was painting.
Same.
So he did some oil painting, some acrylic painting, and he would paint on top of his photographs that he originally took to see if he could edit them. Still didn't like it, but he would create his own canvases and hardboards that he would use. But staying true to form, he started doing these sadomasochistic drawings again. And in the presentation, I have a little bit of a trigger warning because might be triggering. It has like erotic imagery that's kind of Silent Hill-ish for me.
Okay.
So I'll let you go ahead and take a look at that and just take a minute to soak in what you're looking at.
It reminds me of like a Tool video.
Yeah, it does.
It's like, that's what it looks like.
Yeah. And like the next Whoa. Couple slides that I have on here are all
question.
I see some masks in these.
It's supposed to be resembling more of like BDSM masks.
Oh.
So
okay.
Like all of these, like a lot of these have images of like whips or some sort of restraint.
Right.
There's some like pretty heavy dominatrix stuff in these pictures that I'm noticing. So
they're fucking creepy, but cool.
Yeah. Like there's some of them where I'm like,
they're terrifying.
I don't like some them. And terrifying. Also I'm kind of interested.
Hot.
That guy in the bottom left is definitely in a drawer or something.
Yeah.
Like a
That's
box.
Cool. Yeah. And it freaks me out.
That one's cool.
And like there's some where he's got like tiny dick pictures and people are like reaching up other people's skirts. But in the next slide, there is like
there's a woman
huge penis, and I don't know how to take
Why?
It.
Why?
Where?
This one.
And the one above it too.
Gross.
Man.
Yeah.
This is
so
really creepy. Or
yeah, these
like,
are creepy.
Some of them are creepy, and this other ones are like, okay, it looks like a weird bondage thing, but like most of these are just kind of creepy and unsettling.
He
totally
is
into dom femmes.
So,
aren't we all?
That's
dominatrix
a quote for this podcast.
But the nipples are weird.
Dude, this penis
the
is making me
vampire.
Uncomfortable. I want to change it and go back
like there's a Nosferatu up in the corner too.
There is
like
a Nosferatu.
It's looking me in the eye, man. I can't look at it.
It's
yeah.
really hairy. It's like a separate arm.
It is very long. But yeah, these are some of his first works, and these actually continue all the way through his art career. Like most of these I found were like from the early days, and then the rest of them don't have dates of when he completed them. So there's some you can tell where he's like there's definitely an era of like you can see the type of like with head shape or body shape or the way he did the shading that they come from from like one time period. Mm-hmm. And then there's some on the first slide where it looks like it's from a very different time period where things are a little bit more reformed. So I think he did those later on in his career. So this is something he returns to over and over and over.
Okay.
I would like to compare different artists who survived the like through that time, World War II.
That would
so
be
that
interesting.
So that we can see if they had similar, like, ominous
themes.
Style.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, right about the time that he was working on these, and then he continued on, he started something that's called his Fantastic series. And this is, like, an era of his paintings where he used his drafting skills from his training at architecture school to create hellish landscapes, horrible creatures, emaciated bodies, and familiar architecture with a nightmarish twist that you guys will see in this slide. He always goes back to Notre Dame if you look at it. Mm-hmm. In some of them, it's just like a shadow. A lot of them, they're fleshy. And it's like, it says something. And he used what he learned about what architecture means in order to put it in his paintings. So like what the different religious things meant.
Interesting.
Dude, these are fucking creepy.
This mm-hmm. looks like Lucifer.
It does look like Lucifer. It also reminds me of, I think it's Irish. There is a folklore of like a warrior where the top half of the person is coming out of the horse. Yeah. I don't remember what it's called.
I don't know what it's called either.
But it reminds me of that. But there's also a small baby in her lap if you look.
Oh, that's terrifying. I didn't yeah. notice that before. Great.
Yeah. Like a lot of these are really poor quality in the PowerPoint.
Super, like,
but if you can look at it and you can look at this art in high detail, it's really cool.
It's like apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he goes for a lot of the time, is this apocalyptic hellscape. And he wants you to feel kind of uncomfortable, which I feel like he does.
Yeah. And it's very telling to the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
These are cool.
So his images deal with anxiety, depression, decay, and a dystopian world. And these all brought him fame. So these paintings are the ones that caused him to become a common name in Poland households and started giving him recognition in other countries. And one of his paintings in 1975 gained him a particular amount of fame. And he ended up getting fired from his job at the bus factory because he was designing buses. And he was like, fuck this, I'm being an artist anyway. So he just kind of continued his own work. You can kind of tell looking at some of these, mm-hmm. but this inspired a lot of metal band covers.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, there's a few of these on here where I definitely have seen them directly used. And that's been fine, apparently.
It's fucking cool.
But you can see these on the covers of albums. I have definitely picked up the top two middle ones in a record store by my house. So
yeah,
it's like it started a whole wave of like this kind of like Vine dark imagery that is used now in metal band covers with the kind of fucking uncomfortable cool. feeling. He uses art to examine mysticism, specifically Eastern mysticism, and then the psyche and the unconscious thoughts, but claimed his art had no meanings, and that when he painted, he did not intend for a piece to have a statement or a story. He, in fact, did not even give most of his...
I know, I'm
no
like...
Statement on
no statement
on
the Well, and he's like, he didn't even give most of his paintings names. So if you look any of these up, they're all called untitled.
You can just, like, sense the trauma after this. After
yeah.
this.
Like, he says that he apparently just sat there and he just went for it. He just
it
started painting.
That way, right?
And he didn't, like, he didn't want to put a storyline. He just painted what was in his unconscious mind, which I think says something.
Yeah.
If
this is what's there. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think
so,
you got it on the head with trauma.
Yeah. So, Baczynski is quoted as saying, meaning is meaningless to me. I do not care for symbolism, and I paint what I paint without meditating on a story. He wanted to leave the meanings of his art up to the viewers and for them to comprehend as they pleased. However, he felt that his art was being misunderstood and described as only grim and dark when he felt like they were actually optimistic and sometimes comedic.
They're very beautiful.
They are very beautiful.
I love the contrast of light and dark. You can see that the nature, regardless of what's happening to the creatures on it, mm-hmm. is still beautiful. Like, almost fairy tale like.
Yeah. It, like, I definitely get a very big, like, fantasy feeling from these.
I don't get the comedic part.
No, not even. But
like, they're funny, no?
Well, and he wanted each one of his paintings to stand individually as their own thing. And he would publicly shame critics when they had attempted to make narratives out of his work, because he was like, just let it be art. And as I was saying, I personally look at this and it's hard for me to believe that he's not making some sort of narrative, and that his art has no meaning, because I feel like if he is painting from the empty space of his mind or his unconscious mind, I'm worried. There is some shit there that he really needs to take care of.
Even if you can't identify the exact event or exact thought that created this image,
mm-hmm.
you still had experience and inspiration behind it.
Well, and you lived through fucking World War II in your childhood. So that
you fought on a German, you know, old German war ground. So.
And that YouTuber that I mentioned earlier, I actually got the title of today's episode from him, tells another theory that I'm going to go into a little bit. And Baczynski's art uses this prominent, brilliant blue color that is seen on the robes of a character we would identify as Death
mm-hmm.
in these paintings. So you can go ahead and... So, like, you can see the very heavy war imagery in these pictures. So there's tanks. There's, like, a little picture of two people riding in a helmet with a body hanging off the back of it that they're dragging. And then the very obvious... military uniforms and the plane flying overhead.
Yeah.
And then the next slide, there should be some imagery that we can less on.
Oh.
Yeah.
This one. This middle one is interesting.
That's one that's used in metal band covers quite a bit.
I could see that.
But he fucking hated mob mentality.
Okay.
Like, you can see in that one of these pictures, they don't have eyes. They're all just... lashing out, and they're standing in crowds and they're all crawling into this gigantic head.
Yeah.
So
again, it looks like a Tool video, like this whole thing.
Yeah.
I hate the mouths and the teeth on these things.
Yeah. Well, and like,
has been seen a lot in his work, the mouths.
Mm-hmm, the mouths. Well, and he really, really hated mob mentality. Like, it's very, very apparent.
Whoa.
But you can see a little bit in this one, the blue color I was mentioning.
Yes.
But if you go on to the next ones, these ones, whoa, the figures in blue one. And that one, this man has a military helmet that we most often see with Nazi officers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just want to point out, as this YouTuber did, the Grim Reaper figure standing in front of these train carts full of emaciated bodies with religious figures being carted away.
Mm-hmm.
And the
no
connection between
all.
Nazis there.
Yeah. But there are no statements in his art.
Yeah, absolutely none. So this really bright blue, my partner can corroborate this. I fucking hate when people are like, the fucking curtains were blue because the character is depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hate when people do that. And in this one, it's too much of a coincidence for me to ignore, because this color that we are seeing here is called Prussian blue.
Mm.
This history behind Prussian blue got its name from the chemical that is used to create it, known as prussic acid, and that's also known as hydrogen cyanide. This hydrogen cyanide is used when making a pesticide from an acid called Zyklon B, which was used by the Nazis in the gas chambers.
Yeah, I was about to say biochemical warfare.
Yeah.
Definitely and symbolism. Yep. And in some circumstances, it has been known to stain any surfaces it comes in contact with. So if you see in these pictures of gas chambers, that blue you see on the walls,
dude,
is Prussian
that's
blue.
Fucked up.
And that's from the gas.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it stains the walls. And if you were to scratch off some of that blue, it has the exact same chemical composition as Prussian blue.
Whoa.
Interesting.
So Prussian blue paint now is not toxic,
right,
to be clear. But it shares the same chemical family as his gas that killed a bunch of Jewish people in his hometown. So and it's used to show death.
Every image you showed us on the last slide all screamed to me that they were going away to the gas chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
fucked up.
Yeah, this is interesting as hell.
Yeah.
Well, and there's like, I on one of the last paintings, if you go to the next page, I zoomed in on it, and it says, in hoc signis vintus, or vincis, this was the Latin phrase used by the American Nazi Party.
Huh.
So, he purposely put that in there, I feel.
Right.
Along with the Prussian blue Grim Reaper looking over the cradle of a child. Mm-hmm. And there's a man hanging on the wall that I cropped out here. Mm-hmm. But, coincidence, I think not. And also there's this imagery of numbers constantly being carved or tattooed into people.
Do we know what that means, that statement?
I think it's like, in this we...
I'll Google
it. In this we prosper, or in this glory, I think.
Fucking Nazis. I'll Google it, but keep going. I'll come back to it.
So, after this, his fantastic period came to an end in the 1980s. Bukinski moved on to what is now called his Gothic period.
So, it means... In this sign, thou shalt conquer.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, this was used when saluting by the American Nazi Party.
If Nazis could stop,
just stop doing that shit.
Jesus. You said the Gothic period?
Yeah, so he started his Gothic period. The subject matter of this art shifted a little bit to focus more on deformed heads, more muted colors within his palette, and a series of T-shaped crosses. This is known as the Bensky cross.
Okay.
So a lot more of this religious tone. There's also like this really interesting picture of like this cardinal where their face is super deformed and he's just floating above wearing these like bloody red robes. Mm-hmm. And then one of these pictures is like this ominous person that's just floating over the land with a cross tucked into his front pocket.
These are fucking scary as shit. Dude.
So this is a very like you see this in almost the rest of his arts constantly, is he'll do this T-shape and then these heads that are deformed in different ways, all like rotating slightly.
So weird.
It's interesting being crucified on these crosses.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then there was also some pieces that didn't have a very direct meaning that we don't really aren't really given too much on. During this time, it was now the 1990s, and digital editing had come into its infancy.
He's like, thank God.
And he created this shit.
Damn it. This is just like a silo. A man yeah, silo.
This is like very beginning of like word art and Photoshop. So like he wanted to fuck around with it. So he went back to into photography a little bit, and he was like, I'm just gonna revisit this, because now he thought maybe now I can manipulate photos as I wanted to back then.
Yeah.
But he also ended up like doing some work with this and then just gave up on it because it wasn't where he wanted it to be, because this is the 1990s.
Plus he's fucking everything's old by this awful. Time,
right? Yeah, he's getting up there in age. So he returned to painting and was like, fuck photo editing, I'm not doing this. Cool. Bukinski's already horror filled life did not end in his adolescence, however. And this can be seen in his art, that it haunted his unconscious mind. And in 1998, another series of hardships would begin. Bukinski had married a woman named Zofia Helena Sankiewicz, I believe.
Bukinski? That's him?
Yeah, that's Bukinski.
He's kind of hot.
He's kind of hot.
From this corner, anyway.
I love Les being, like, kind of hot.
I love his glasses.
Mm-hmm. He was in some of those photos I showed you at the very, very beginning.
Yeah.
He like did some self photography
as well. Oh, he was the one with the funny guy?
I don't know if that was him. There was one where like you can see a man in glasses and he's like very like he has some pretty heavy shadows on him, and that's him. Cool. So he like fucked around and was not afraid of being in his own art. I think most of those faces in that last picture I showed you where it's all like photoshopped. Mm-hmm. I think most of those are his faces also.
Okay.
So you can see he's a little bit older in them.
Yeah.
See, got his man, his little son, the old go-to bowl cut.
Yeah. So he married his wife in 1951 when he was 22. And together they had a son 7 years later that they named Thomas. Thomas was had a very like heavy interest in rock music like his father. Yeah. And he later on went into he also had like a interest in horror films, and he later became a music journalist and a translator and a charismatic radio host. So he was like pretty like he got really far in life. And you can tell that he definitely got some inspiration from his father's works, because he loved horror, he loved rock. The family's life was completely uneventful and was referred to as calm. They moved to Warsaw in 1977, and Baczynski was not a socialite by any means. He preferred to stay home with his family. He just wanted to paint, listen to music, and be with his family. Interestingly enough, it's said that he had obsessive compulsive disorder since he was a child.
Shocker.
So any type of traveling would cause, in the artist's own words, neurotic diarrhea. So his neurotic diarrhea came with the anxiety of traveling and being away from his home and his family. His anxiety would interfere and keep him from attending the openings of his own exhibits. So, but he would do like quite a few interviews.
Nice.
Okay. So he was like a recluse when he wanted to be, like us. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Baczynski's wife, Sophia, succumbed to cancer in 1998 at the age of 70. And a year later, his son, Thomas, commits suicide at the age of 41 on Christmas Eve.
What the fuck?
Baczynski was the one to discover his son's body, and he was never able to come to terms with it.
No. Oh, my God. This poor man's life is marred by tragedy.
Why the fuck did his son commit suicide? I thought he was doing well. And
I think...
Not that that's all that it takes not to.
Yeah, I don't know.
What the fuck? Fucking sucks.
Yeah, and I think I didn't include this in my notes, but there was even a part where, like, finding his son's body obviously was so traumatizing, but he kept a letter stapled or pinned to his wall that was to his son.
Aww.
And he never opened it. So, like, that really kind of fuck things up for him, understandably.
Jesus.
Baczynski had always been known as a very pleasant person and humorous despite his unsettling paintings, but on February 21st, 2005, 75-year-old Baczynski was found dead in his home with 17 stab wounds to his body.
Jesus!
What? It turned into a crime!
We are a true
what
crime podcast!
Fuck no! Oh,
sorry, I was not expecting
that.
Exactly! upon investigation, it turned out Baczynski had gotten into an argument with 19-year-old Robert Kubik, who was a son of Baczynski's caretaker. And when Baczynski refused to loan Robert money, he stabbed him. I want you to know that the amount of money was $100.
Jesus.
Baczynski's like, fuck no, get out of here.
He got murdered over $100.
Wow.
By a fucking 19-year-old. Do you even grasp what you have just done?
Yeah, like to an amazing artist who's had the worst life of his, like, anyone, basically.
Of his life.
The
basically,
worst life
fuck
of
this
life.
19-year-old.
Yeah, in other words, fuck that 19-year-old.
Robert was sentenced to 25 years in prison on November 9th, 2006. And I have here the, you know, a photo that was taken about the time of Baczynski's death. You can see he's a happy little old man.
Cute little old
he's
man.
He's very
so cute.
Cute. And then there's that fucking 19-year-old that looks like a skinhead.
Oh, was he a Nazi?
I don't know.
Are you gonna
maybe.
Tell me he's a Nazi?
I don't
tell
know.
Me
like, he's a Nazi, everything so I gave you was everything I was given about the case. So
damn
there you
it.
Go. There's our true crime portion.
Whoa.
That's
like
it.
The whole really thing cool. qualifies. Yeah.
This one's almost like a visual podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here we have the
whoa.
Family tombstone. So there's his wife, his son, and Baczynski.
Wow.
And then right next to it, you can see this big T that is based off of one of his paintings. And that was actually put up by Burning Man as a memorial. So that is on the
what
Burning
the
Man
fuck?
Land.
That's rad.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, okay. That wow. makes kind of no sense, but all right.
Burning yeah. Man's full of weird shit. I don't know.
But that's part of it. And then in 2006, Bikinski's homeland in Poland actually opened a museum for his art.
Yay.
And
he's the coolest artist you guys have, apparently. So.
Yeah, it's like I really want to go to this, but it's like a bunch of personal gallery, like personal mm-hmm. collections.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's one person who has like 600 pieces of his art or something Damn. Like that. Yeah, it's like his shit is amazing, and I would love to own one of his pieces. But the imagery in his paintings led to a point-and-click game in 2005 called Tormentum that I'm interested in playing later.
Yeah, which you guys will see on our Patreon
yes.
at some point.
Oh, I'm going to find it. But it yeah. looks fun.
We're going to find it.
And actually, there's his work actually inspired Guillermo del Toro.
Oh shit.
Okay,
yeah.
I could see that.
Like he has like a there's a quote from Guillermo about his art and how, like what it means to him.
Aww.
And there's like there's some stuff floating around that maybe it had a hand in inspiring Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh shit.
Which I would be surprised by, but
dude,
I didn't find a direct
like
quote
all
so I can't
almost.
Say that.
It just screams inspired by him, Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie, so I can't.
It's
well, when you do, you're going to
yeah.
Like that creature that was in there that keep, you know, like the yeah. Tool-esque.
Yeah.
I always say Guillermo's art is kind of like Tool-esque as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah, but anyway, you're, yeah, that movie's fucking, it screams.
We need to watch it. It's
World
on
War One, World War Two.
We need to watch it.
It's very good.
Yeah. And you know what else his art kind of reminds me of when I was looking at it? Like H.R. Giger?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one who made Alien, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he
oh, yeah, he actually that's exactly what I was gonna say. Also, his art is often compared to that.
Yeah,
like
I could see it
in most of the articles I found. They always were like, yeah, the two are very very similar.
Yeah,
and actually
Silent Hill.
On this last yeah, it's a very Silent Hill reminiscent for me. That's why I love him.
Yeah,
that makes sense. But I will leave you guys with the final painting that he created. He actually finished this
Whoa.
The day he was murdered.
Wow.
So this is his final work of art. And you will see that on the website. So I highly recommend that you guys go to our namnab.com and take a look at all these pictures because
yes.
they are a very crucial part of this episode in case you haven't noticed.
That's so cool, dude.
But please go look at his art. I love him so much.
What's his name again, Gnomes?
Bikinski. I cannot remember his first name.
I was surprised you got it right the first time.
Me too.
You
like
said
oh, said it. I was
damn.
Like, holy
I
shit, there's an L in there.
I looked up so many different ways to look it up, and I still probably fucked it up. But
it's okay. It sounded right to
yeah.
me.
Yeah, and
Poland,
it all ended.
Tell us if we're wrong. Someone from Poland, please.
Someone from Poland, please just rip into me. but yeah, unfortunately, I had to leave you on murder.
I mean, no.
So this is the
don't,
time
are
where
we
I was
always
like,
leaving on murder.
This is the time I was hoping it wasn't murder, but it
Me
was.
Me too, and all murder. The rest of the things. Life's just like, no, you can't have anything good.
Yeah.
You're born into war. You get shitty mental health issues,
been
and then
the
you get murdered, and your wife died, and your son commits suicide.
Because like, I've never been to anything like that. The remnants of the camps or anything.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
still have the chambers on site.
Yeah, they have yeah. some of them. I think some of them have been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think they're for historic purposes.
Yeah, they're
though.
For historic
yeah.
purposes.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But it's just like before
it's
this. Like,
yeah.
You know, could you imagine if he like ran into one as a kid just playing?
Nope.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Well, he was already
a
teenager by the time that World War II ended. So
right.
He. I was gonna say stupid teenager stuff. I would have
yeah.
went and like fucked around.
Fuck yeah, I would have went.
But I don't know, like, you can look at all those pictures of the camps and you'll still see the train tracks leading into them.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know why, but that's the portion that gets me every time. Like,
mm-hmm.
you can see all this, like, pictures from inside the camp and how weird it is and even the gas chambers. But the railroad tracks leading into the camps is the thing that bothers me the most.
I could see that.
And it's just so haunting. So I'm interested in going and just seeing what's there.
I've always been interested in doing that in like the Anne Frank house and like that kind of stuff.
Podcast road trip.
I would be so down.
It's not even a road trip at that point. We have to fly.
Yeah, we have to go
on
across
a boat.
The ocean. Yeah.
Donate to us.
Patreon.
Give us money.
Patreon.
Yeah,
see
Patreon.
An episode about this shit up. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Anyway.
Entire episode on just Nazis.
Y'all, yeah. come back next week. I have another Australian case for you because I can't
cool.
stop talking about Australia.
Fucked up shit happens in Australia.
Yeah, fucked
dude.
Up shit. They're fucked up creatures in Australia.
Not to mention Tasmania.
What, you don't want a spider crawling out of your shoe? That's the size of your head?
No, I don't. I would light my home on fire.
You, Sheila.
No, I'm just kidding. Also, kangaroos are terrifying. Come back next week.
Bye.